This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me...
Kate Eplin.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, in last week's session we were talking about the issue of volunteers and so on, but how large is the voluntary sector overall? It seems there's many organisations, lots of people involved in it.
There are many organisations and a lot of people involved in it. So for the Manawatu area, we actually have one of the highest amounts of social services available across the country. Don't know why it's always been the case. Maybe it's just we're more proactive in this area about trying to solve a problem. Who knows?
One possibility, I know, living in Palmerston North, if you're living in a large centre, you've got large commuting time into work and back. Here you don't. It's just a few minutes. So you've got evenings when you can do things which might not happen in large cities.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Might be.
Who knows what the factor is, but it's always been the case that I've known that there's more in this area. So there's around about 480 registered organisations within the Manawatu Horowhenua. And some of them are relatively new and some of them have been going forever and a day.
And have some died out?
Some have died out and, you know, they unfortunately potentially are going to be more dying out over the next 10 years if we carry on doing things as we currently do instead of looking at how can we work collaboratively.
And why is that?
Firstly, there's not the people to volunteer, because if you have, as I said last week, if you have 400 boards, that's 3,200 volunteers.
Yeah.
Volunteer Central has just under 2,000 volunteers registered with us. So you need a third again just to do the board work, let alone the work of running the op shop or weeding the community garden or whatever. So there's just not the people available to sustain that amount of organisations. But also the dollar, the community dollar is less and less available. The councils in 2004 have all had to make really hard decisions about what they'll continue to fund and what they won't be able to continue to fund. And you know, do they actually put investment into safe drinking water, or do they put investment into a bowling club?
And while volunteers might give free labour, there's all the other costs involved in
running the organisation. You know, I've been approached recently by three organisations who all want to buy a van and set up a van run to get people that are part of their organisation to different groups. So they come to me and say, oh, we'd like to get some volunteers because we're going to set up this organisation. And I go, well, have you spoken with the six organisations that already have vans that you might be able to tap into, instead of spending $45,000 each on a new van, let alone the running costs and storage costs, etc., of that van, which puts it up to, you know, $135,000 for three vans from the community dollar. We can't afford to do it anymore.
So the exchange of knowledge and coordination is an important factor.
Yeah, that's a big part of what we do, is that community connection. So we have a wide range of knowledge across the community, and particularly through myself, because I've worked in health and social services in the Manawatu Horowhenua and Tararua for nearly 40 years. So
you know a lot of the people.
All of those linkages just carry on, and if I don't know the person or who I should tap into, I know someone that will know.
Do you find there are close networks then, or a lot of people working in isolation?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, there is competition out there in the not-for-profit sector to stay viable. However, the funders that are out there, like DIA and Eastern and Central Community Trust, etc., have made it very clear that collaboration for best community impact will be what they'll be funding.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so when we're talking about the voluntary sector, what's the broad range of act? I know there's, you've got sports coaching, you've got support for the elderly, you've got the arts and drama and music.
We've got everything.
So if you were asked to sort of divide it up, would you say, well, there's a large amount of this and a small amount of that?
It depends on the community and what that community's priorities are. So, for example, in Palmerston North, Kai security is one of the big things that Palmerston North City Council are concerned about.
Food security for...
Yes. So there's a lot of organisations and volunteers in working in food security or Kai security in Palmerston North. However, if you look at Horowhenua, there's probably more effort around youth engagement and getting young people involved in the community and developing skills and positive ways of being. Manawatu has a lot of organisations that have started out as what you may call hobby organisations that have developed from a hobby or a special interest. So there's no
ethnic groups and refugees and
wide range of ethnic groups. There's 135 ethnicities within our region, and volunteering is a great way for former refugees or migrants to actually connect to the community and learn English and
One's good for connecting to the community, and then other things would be good for supporting the different groups, I suppose.
If we look at former refugees, for example, we provide volunteers called refugee support volunteers through Red Cross to support the families when they come into the area. And when I say support, they help people. How do you use an FPOS machine? How do you get money out of the wall? Where do you go if you need healthcare? You know, all of those sorts of things, orienting people to the community. And then there's other organisations that support former refugees to learn English. So they have classes like English Language Partners and English Training College, or Teaching College, sorry. They have classes about teaching English and conversational English. A multicultural centre do it as well. And they have volunteers who are interested in conversing with people and helping them to read or look at road signs. And then you have the... maintaining people's cultural element of people coming into the country. So we have volunteers that support organisations to hold cultural events, for example Diwali or the Multicultural Festival, etc. So across the whole spectrum, volunteers are there.
And the health sector, you said you were working in the health sector before, so are many volunteers in there?
There are. Their structure has changed a fair bit. So it used to be that there were things like the trolley dollies that would go around the wards and
trolley dollies?
Yes.
go
around the wards offering people, you know, to buy a chocolate bar or a newspaper or something like that.
Okay.
I think they call them candy stripers in America or something.
Oh, okay.
But that role's no longer there. That stopped just before COVID, or because of COVID, and they haven't reinstated it. There's the Friends of Emergency Department, so people that volunteer just to sit with people who might be anxious, or make them a cup of tea, or get them a sandwich, or just keep an eye, you know, make sure things are tidy. There's hospital hosts, both at Palmerston North Hospital and Horowhenua Health Centre.
Hospital hosts, what do they
Hospital
mean?
Hosts are in the foyers of the centres, and they're there for anyone to go and say, how do I find my way to whatever? I'm not feeling well, where's the closest toilet? So they're just there to help help people navigate and feel supported. There's Friends of the Garden of Tranquility at Palmerston North Hospital, which was a memorial garden that's been developed with all sorts of sensory experiences, etc. So there's volunteers that go in and tidy those gardens. There's volunteers that do the car park shuttle and things like that. So all sorts.
Yeah, and there's a lot now about, I know, things like palliative care, a lot more in the home rather than institutionalised. So
it's been a trend for probably 15 odd years, 20 odd years actually. A strategy called Ageing in Place was developed as a national strategy, and that was to try to support people to stay in their own homes as much as possible. There are pros and cons to that. I mean, everyone feels more comfortable in their own home, obviously, and surrounded by the things that they know and the people that they know. But the challenge is if someone has lost all of their friends and family and can't drive anymore, how do they connect to the community? The risk is they just sit there alone.
Isolation can be a problem.
So, there's a lot of volunteer roles around just being someone's friend.
Okay. So, and your involvement in this area, what brought you into that?
I guess I've always been involved in it. My parents were probably very proactive community people. And we always had exchange students, and my mum was a teacher in a children's ward, so when it was school holiday time and some of the kids couldn't go back to their own homes or anything, they'd come and live with us for the holiday period. So it's always just been normal for me to be in the community and surrounded by the community. And I've always been involved in, you know, coaching or managing sports teams and on school boards and all sorts of different volunteering opportunities. But I went into nursing as a career. My clinical field was mental health, and went into crisis work for a while and saw a lot of the struggles that people are living with. And then I went into public health services, which broadened the horizon even more because you're looking at a whole population area.
A lot of people don't understand what public health is, but it's massive.
Yes, it is massive. Right. So it's a real community in national and international viewpoint and research.
And often it's very beneficial, but spread over a large number of people rather than focused.
People don't often see it. But in this area, there's a program that Julie Jack started up about 24, 25 years ago called Online for Nine. And that's a program for year eight school leavers from rural communities where they've often been at the same school, which might have 100 kids at it. And they're the top dog, and they're going to go to a massive high school where they don't know the way of acting or being, and suddenly they're at the bottom of the pile again. So Online for Nine was a program initially started through public health and provided through public health that has then been passed on to the community to continue, and they are still continuing it. So that's often where public health sit, is at that beginning stages, getting something happening and then passing it back to the community to
There's a lot with there's this big growth of learning problems and attention deficit and that sort of thing. Is that more a professional area to intervene or support people in class with
there are a lot of mentoring roles and support roles in class and also just out in the community. It might be in the school grounds at lunchtime, you know, just being with someone so they don't feel overwhelmed or anything. I suspect it may not be that there's a whole heap more of it. It's just that it's more recognised.
Once a problem's defined, then you're aware of it and you've got a label for things. Instead of saying the child's having problems settling down,
that's right. Or they're just a troubled child, or you know, they can't concentrate on anything. There's now a spectrum for it.
Spectrum, that's right. Or a syndrome or something.
So I mean, there's lots of changes, but for me, moving into the social services field was, I actually love seeing people, organisations, community, etc., succeed. So when someone comes in as a volunteer and registers, and they're as shy as anything, and they just need a supportive environment to test them out a little bit and extend their comfort zone. Actually seeing them move from that shy person to the person who's getting cheeky and really engaging as part of the team and feeling good about what they're doing. That's really satisfying.
Now, this is interesting as well. I think some people, if you ask someone off the street, why do people volunteer? You think, oh, maybe some sort of community duty or whatever. But there's a lot that, as you say, a lot that people get out of volunteering. You say if they want, they think a change of career, or they want to learn the language, they've come from overseas,
or gain confidence, find friends, develop different skills. Volunteering counts as work experience on CVs, and you can get references to go towards your employability.
So you need some sort of semi-official structure for that, don't you?
Yes.
Which is why volunteering with an organisation, you can then get the comment back, you were part of this, and so on.
So we as Volunteer Central, or actually Volunteer Centres, we only provide volunteers to organisations. We don't provide them to individuals.
I think that's interesting, because sometimes they say, oh, well, this is unpaid work, they're doing it for free. Well, no, actually they're doing it because in return they're getting something of value to them, and we're not always recognising the benefits to the volunteer.
And we need to be really careful around recognising volunteers and saying, oh, well, they're not getting paid for it. They're doing it because they want to. It is their gift to the community.
Well, there's the idea also of a sense of purpose and feeling of belonging. Those are important aspects of personal well-being.
So. Yes, absolutely they are. And often overlooked as a benefit to volunteering. And part of my role as manager of Whatumatua Volunteer Central is to make sure that organisations are recognising volunteers appropriately. And a lot of people just want to say, oh, you know, here's a gift voucher, here's a gift voucher, here's a gift voucher. If you keep doing that, that becomes a payment. And then they get in trouble with IRD. Or NSD. So you don't want to put your volunteers in that situation. And a lot of it is people getting over their own discomfort about the fact that people actually want to give their own time. They don't need a payment for it. Give them a biscuit when they come in for their duty, or give them a ride home at the end of it.
Yeah. Well, if they're doing it partly for connection and everything as well, so that you just like them as people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the other thing that's often overlooked is the value of volunteering on the economy. It's about $1.4 billion per annum is put into New Zealand through volunteering. A local example of that is we had the Ford Ranger hockey tournament here in Palmerston North in September, and they actually used the turfs down at Levin and at Massey University as well.
Yeah.
That week-long tournament brought $3 million into this local economy.
Yeah.
That was volunteers that were doing all the picking up of the rubbish and tidying up in the car park, marshalling and everything like that. So, you know, it's a significant contributor.
Yeah, we had a similar comment actually from in a seminar series. Rachel Barn was talking about we were talking about the arts and various events that go on, and she said, "Yes, well," and people say, "Why is the council supporting the arts like that?" And so, well, we're not supporting the arts or a sports event or something. We're doing it because this is part of the vibrancy of the city. It brings people in who spend money. It makes it an attractive place to people for people to live because of all these things happening around them. So, so it's an important aspect of
the it is, and that's the balancing act for the councils is how much, you know, where is the pivot point as to creativity and vibrancy versus infrastructure.
Apparently the balancing point is about 15% of council expenditure. but it's for economic purposes and brings in a lot
that's
of
benefits. That's for this, council, for Palmerston North Council. That's not necessarily the same with
that's
the other councils that I've worked with.
That's true. Okay. Now, one aspect, I think, if you going back some time, there would have, well, in fact, you know, 100, maybe outside New Zealand, sort of 200 years or more, churches used to be very important in terms of all sorts of community support. Are churches still very important in the voluntary sector, or have things shifted to other types of organisations?
They are an active part of the community sector, particularly around the what's called pastoral care, which is making sure people are okay. So they are still actively involved in that. There are groups like City Mission who have taken it, even though they are part of a particular religious group, their service is available to the whole community. Salvation Army as well. Other community groups tend to focus more, or church groups tend to focus more on their congregation and their local community. But they are still actively involved in food parcels, keeping, you know, if someone's got a family member in hospital, they'll often be cooking meals for them and taking around second-hand shops with the clothing and getting items that may have gone into, you know, just rubbish or thrown out that actually are in reasonable repair. But I'll just do a plug here. They're not, op shops are not there just to get your junk that you're going to throw away. It does need to be in good condition so they can resell it.
Absolutely. But this is interesting because when you hear people volunteering and you think, oh, you're volunteering for a church or for Red Cross or for hospice and so on, or for street van in Palmerston North, a lot of it, they've got their own shops, which is a fundraising venture. So a lot of volunteers are actually doing... and even, I suppose, in the library, you get volunteers with book sales and so on. So there's a lot of voluntary activity is in helping these organisations get the funding that they need?
Partly, is part of what it's there for. But there's a lot of our community, and it's growing, who can't afford clothing, can't necessarily afford good food, have the means to cook good food.
And also, is some of this the knowledge, though? I know you've got, is it super grands? And I heard they're teaching some young people how to boil an egg.
Super grands, big brothers, big sisters.
But are there lots of skills that have disappeared? You know, you can get prepared meals in the supermarket and heat them up, but you're paying a lot more than if you cook them yourself. But people have lost the knowledge as to how to just buy basic ingredients that don't cost much and make them
delicious. And in the olden days, you usually had traditionally your mother at home who would be cooking the meals, etc. I remember my my grandmother saying my father couldn't boil water when he left home, and my mother making a real effort to teach him how to cook basic stuff, so if something happened to her, he could still continue. So that was sort of in the 70s that that mindset came in, and then in the 80s, and then in the 90s everything became throwaway and quick.
And smaller families as well. I think when you got larger families, then the older children are learning aspects of caring for the younger ones and so on, and a lot of that.
A lot of that community aspect.
And even sit down for a meal together has gone.
Well, you need to have a dining table to do that.
Yes, and you can get them from mock shops.
You can get them, it's a big cycle, and really looking at the whole community, as opposed to individual aspects, is the only way that you actually become aware of the wider context.
You think communities are more fragmented now?
Parts of it are. I think we are getting better at working, at being together and supporting each other again.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of... One of the things with migrant people coming in is there's a lot of similarities between some of the migrant cultures that are coming in, or the migrant values that are coming in, that Mana Whenua actually practice as well. So it's actually strengthening those looking after your older people. A community, it takes a community to grow a community. A lot of those sorts of values are actually being strengthened by the migrant people that are coming in.
And you find they do tend to mix rather than form their own separate community.
We recruit a lot of volunteers from the migrant sector. While some do stay within their own community because of particular cultural values, for example, some cultures, women can't go out without a chaperone, for example, so it makes it hard for them to move out into other communities. But for others, they very much get engaged in the community, the wider community, but still keep their own identity when it comes to celebrating.
Could you label some, though, as how this particular group are really out there?
I don't like to label groups. Okay. No.
fair enough. And they vary as often. It might depend if there's a particular group of leader and driver in the community that brought them out.
Very much so. But one of the things that we're very keen on ensuring occurs within the community, and it's one of the values of Whatumatoa Volunteer Central, is around inclusion. And ultimately, inclusion is about seeing people as people, that everyone's got everyone's got something to offer, and everyone's got needs as well. And it's just how do we as a community tap into that and identify it and work together to address it.
We're just about at time, but I think there's also maybe a shift in the perception in New Zealand, because with all the different groups coming from elsewhere, there's a distinction between assimilation and integration. And I believe there was the idea in New Zealand we want everyone to fit in and be like us, and now there's more an awareness of differences, and you can celebrate differences while fitting them into a...
What is like us would be the question.
Absolutely. Now we're questioning a lot more. Well, then it was fairly well defined, even if it didn't fit a lot of people. Yes. I'm thinking when I came, sort of 50 years ago.
Yes.
So
happy volunteering. Contact us and sign up.
If people are wondering what to do, join there. Just go to the...
Go to our website. Just do a Google search for Volunteer Central.
Volunteer Central. And you're in Hancock House in King Street, Palmerston.
We are upstairs.
Yes. And you're happy to register people. And if groups are looking for volunteers, join the organisation.
And we also have a pop-up service at Te Takari in Levin. That's on a Monday and a Wednesday from 10 to 2.
Thank you for listening to Manawatū Conversations. This and other recent programmes can also be found on the Manawatū People's Radio website,
and a range of programmes is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.